Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. The economic news of an otherwise terrible week, straight ahead from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 27th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There is the story of the week, of course, from which we have pulled some economic threads the past couple of days. We, though, are going to take the straight-ahead news of this week in the economy now, what happened, why, and what it means. Anna Swanson's at the New York Times. Brian Chung is at Yahoo Finance. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai. Hey, Kai.
So, Brian, let me start with you, and I want to talk about inflation, of course, the Fed's preferred measure, personal consumption expenditure out today. I'm just going to go ahead and say flat-ish. Peak inflation or no? What do you think?
Well, it's a little bit of a Rorschach test, the inflation numbers that we got just this morning, but 6.3% increases in prices on a year-over-year basis from that PCE measure. That is a tick down from the 6.6% growth that we had seen in the month of March. So you might be able to take a little bit of solace from that, but keep in mind, the Federal Reserve's target on this particular inflation measure is 2%. So by all measures, this is still very elevated inflation. You don't need to tell Americans that they're noticing this at the stores. So this likely doesn't change the Federal Reserve's approach, which is to continue to raise interest rates.
Yeah, no, it's not going to change it, Brian. But let me ask you this, and I'm honestly not trying to be flip here, but there's a case to be made that flat is the new down, right? That people are going to be glad it stopped going up.
Yeah, certainly. And we've seen some notes like from Evercore ISI. I think Peter Williams over there is saying that, look, it does show that PCE is continuing to show that underlying inflation shock is slowing. Of course, flat is not good enough for the Fed, though. Basically, Jay Powell has said to you and in other public commentary that you got to see it in the data. And until you get it actually going down, flat is not going to be good enough.
Yeah. Anna, I was struck by something. I forget if it was late last week or early this week, that the United States, the American economy is going to grow faster than the Chinese economy for the first time since like Mao was around. That seems relevant.
Yeah, I think so. So relevant to the inflation discussion
to everything.
As well.
Relevant to everything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, it's because of these really intense lockdowns that we've seen in China, about 7 weeks in Shanghai, other extended lockdowns in major cities. You know, the Chinese government has been trying to keep traffic moving through the ports. But if you lock people in their houses for 7 weeks, economic activity is going to slow down. And so the question is, what does that mean for everybody else? I mean, obviously, that is a big drag on global growth. And in the short term, it's kind of cooled some things. So, you know, cooled a little bit of the pressure on oil prices, on shipping. But, you know, you also have kind of a big backlog building up. And so I think, you know, when the gates lift again, there's going to be a rush to get products out of the country again. And we're going to see renewed supply chain issues.
Well, go farther on that one, right? Because Shanghai and Ningbo, the two big ports on the central Chinese coast, are, as you have said, largely shut down. They're not getting much stuff out of there. And yet we're kind of rejoicing over here saying, oh, look, the port backlogs down at Long Beach and Los Angeles are down to like 30 ships from 120 or whatever it was.
Right. You think it might be the calm before the storm here, right? So, yeah, absolutely. And we're just about running into the busy summer season where retailers try to get a lot of product across. So, yeah, I think there's going to be much more competition and we could see price pressures for durable goods tick up again, potentially.
Brian, talk to me about housing for a second. New home sales down 17%, we learned this week. Pending home sales down 4%. Obviously, that is what is supposed to happen to some degree when the Fed raises interest rates. Seems like a lot, though.
Yeah, certainly. And a lot of that is a function of the borrowing costs for mortgages just got dramatically higher over the last few months. We saw the 30-year fixed mortgage rate go up to as high as 5.3% for a 30-year fix. But we've actually seen that come down a little bit. It actually decreased for 2 weeks in a row to 5.1%. So watch out for that trend reversing. But either way you cut it or slice it, it's more expensive to try to get a mortgage now. Although anyone that's tried to buy a house recently, depending, of course, on where you are, is going to tell you that it still looks pretty hot. You still see a lot of bids over asking. It's hard to find a home right now. So the supply equation is still very much a big part of that as well.
Yeah. Anna, I don't want to get too far into the White House rough and tumble on the politics of tariffs, but there is, shall we say, a discussion happening, and it's largely happening between the Trade Representative Ambassador Katherine Tai and the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, over whether or not to lift some or all of the Trump-era China tariffs and what that might do. First of all, what's your understanding of the state of play?
So I think that it's still a live discussion. The statements by the president and Jake Sullivan and others in the last week have made that really clear. And so there, you know, there definitely is some disagreement within the administration right now about how quickly they should be moving to roll back tariffs and what the impact on inflation would be. But, you know, just kind of stepping back more broadly, I thought it's interesting that what seems to be happening is that some officials in the White House are losing patience with the fact that 16 months into the Biden presidency, the terms of trade with China are basically unchanged. So from the tariffs to the trade deal, you know, and partly the Biden administration always said they didn't think much could be done to change China's trade behavior. So they would focus on changing the environment around it, investing more in the U.S., rebuilding alliances. But it still kind of leaves something to be desired for a lot of people that everything is pretty much the same with China as when they came into office. And Democrats had obviously criticized President Trump's China strategy. So, so you know, it really begs the question, did they think that wasn't so bad or are they just not coming up with something better?
What do you make, though, of the basic disagreement between Ambassador Tai and Secretary Yellen? You know, Ambassador Tai says, look, we got to keep these on for fundamentally strategic reasons to control the China relationship. And Secretary Yellen saying they're not strategic tariffs at all.
Right. So I think it does reflect, you know, a bit of this dynamic in the Biden trade policy and in the Trump administration as well. Just, you know, this conflict between kind of more of traditionalists like Janet Yellen when it comes to thinking about trade. Like most economists, she sees international trade as beneficial for consumers. She sees tariffs as taxes. You know, she is kind of more pro-trade than a lot of counterparts in the White House. And in the Biden administration, actually, in the Trump administration as well, there's been a more kind of skeptical view of trade that's come to predominate in recent years that, you know, trade deals have sold out American workers. Maybe it's better to do nothing at all rather than sign new deals. Yeah. And part of that has to do with the close relationship with labor groups who favor the tariffs and say they've been helpful for rebuilding industry. But I think that's a bit more of the direction that Katherine Tai is coming from.
Brian, last thing to you. I want to touch on the Fed real quick. The minutes of the most recent meeting came out this week. They said what we thought they would say, which is, you know, we're going to raise interest rates 50 basis points a couple of times. I was struck, though, by Rafael Bostic, the president of the Atlanta Fed, saying this week, you know what, we might do a couple of rate hikes and then just take a pause and see what happens. What do you make of that?
Yeah, those comments from the Atlanta Fed president really had markets kind of interested. We do know that the Federal Reserve has built a pretty strong coalescence around 250 basis points, bips, beeps. I just call it half a percentage point moves in the next two meetings. That'll be in June and July. Now, after that, though, what happens? And the Atlanta Fed president saying, well, maybe they could not move in the September meeting. Whether or not that turns out to be the case depends on what the data looks like about 4 months from now, which no one can really tell you for sure. So the Atlanta Fed president probably just trying to give himself a little bit of flexibility, as is the broad case. We know that the Fed and Fed Chair Jay Powell has said the key word is expeditiously. So it seems like either way you cut it, it's going to be a lot more interest rate hikes for the remainder of this year. Yeah. What the magnitude of that is going to be, or the pace by which they do that past July, remains to be seen.
Brian Chung, he's at Yahoo Finance. Anna Swanson's at the New York Times. Thanks, you too.
Have a good weekend.
Have a nice weekend, you too. On Wall Street this Friday, up for the day, up for the week, for a change. Details, numbers, when we get there. Whether we are at or past or still waiting for peak inflation, consumers have been spending up a storm 0.9% more than in April than they did in March. It's a sign that however consumers are feeling about inflation and thus the economy, they're feeling pretty flush right now, at least when it comes to pulling out their credit cards or dipping into their bank accounts to get what they want. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has that one.
Americans' incomes went up 0.4% in April. But here's the thing, personal spending went up 0.7%, and that's after accounting for inflation. Dan Haddon's an economist at Nationwide.
Things are looking pretty bright as far as the consumer is concerned. What this is saying is that despite the higher prices that consumers have to pay, they're still willing to go out and spend more.
More than they've got coming in every month. So how are they doing it? Ross Mayfield is at Baird.
What you're starting to see is people draw down some of the savings that they've accumulated over the past couple of years from pandemic era stimulus programs, significant wage gains, or really just not being able to have an outlet to spend your money.
Mayfield says consumers now have about $2 trillion in savings. But as they draw it down, they're getting stressed.
You're starting to see the pressure on the consumer, and the consumer hasn't cracked yet.
But he says there are signs of wear and tear. For one thing, continued high inflation has driven consumer sentiment down to rock bottom.
Inflation in and of itself is one of the least popular phenomenons out there. It pulls terribly. But given the position of the consumer, they're willing to survey that they hate inflation and then still go out and spend anyway.
But will people be able to keep up the spending from their savings? Michael Pierce at Capital Economics says not likely.
I mean, the saving rate's fallen from above 8% at the beginning of this year to 4.5% now, and that's just unsustainable.
Pierce predicts in coming months, consumers will start pulling back to protect what's left of their savings. University of Michigan economist Betsy Stevenson thought that would already be happening, with high inflation and rising interest rates and talk of recession.
If, you know, the threat of a recession is looming, the smart thing to do is build your savings up.
But she says so far, Americans seem confident that they'll keep their jobs and their pay will keep rising. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
I don't know if you saw this the other day, but the first tropical disturbance of the year hit this past weekend, moved inland from the Gulf of Mexico over central Alabama, and then kind of faded away, as those storms do once they hit land. I mention it because hurricane season hasn't even started yet. The officially recognized date is June 1st, next Wednesday. And this year, for the seventh year in a row, forecasters are guessing it's going to be more active than normal, whatever normal means, as this planet gets hotter. But while these storms do get more frequent and more destructive, their economic toll is growing as well. Marketplace's Savannah Marr explains.
It's not exactly clear why the number of storms per season is on the rise, says Ben Strauss with the nonprofit Climate Central.
But what we do know is that climate change is making the storms stronger.
Those stronger storms bring more destruction.
They dump more water. They intensify more rapidly, so there's less time to prepare as it's approaching.
And all the stuff that's in these storms' paths is getting more valuable, says Jamie Cruz, a professor of economics at East Carolina University. Just look at the rising value of real estate over the last 2 years.
Even exactly the same house is worth more now, and it may be underinsured.
And rebuilding after a disaster is getting more expensive. Mike Walden is an economist at North Carolina State University.
Construction costs are higher. It's more difficult to get construction materials in. I mean, everyone knows about that and the supply chain problems.
That means mitigation measures, like making homes and infrastructure more storm resilient and strengthening building codes, also come with higher costs. Costs that are still well worth it, according to David Merrick, director of the Emergency Management Program at Florida State University.
The more money that we spend in mitigation, that will actually save us money in response.
But someone, homeowners or businesses or local governments, has to pick up the tab.
And they're paying that against something that they may not be able to see and understand on a nice day like today.
Especially in places that haven't been in a major storm's path before. But as the Atlantic Ocean warms and storms get more severe, Merrick says not spending on mitigation is becoming more of a gamble. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Coming up,
focus their dollars on essential goods.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 575 today, 1.75%, 33,212. The NASDAQ added 390 points. That is 3.33%, 12,131. The S&P 500 put on about 100 points, 2.5%, 41.58. For the week, the market shook off the wah-wahs that they've been having the last, like, what? While anyway, Dow added nearly 6.25%. The NASDAQ gained 6.8%. S&P 500 up more than 6.5%. Big travel weekend coming up, as you know, Memorial Day and all that. AAA predicts more than 39 million people are going to travel 50 miles or more from home over this long weekend. Air travel, as I said yesterday, running about 25% above last year. AAA says some of the big travel destinations are warm places, Orlando, Miami, but also near the top of the list, Seattle. Rain. I don't know. Foreign travel, Vancouver, Canada. Not forecast to be warm up there, I guess. Go figure. Bonds pretty steady all week, including today. Yield on the 10-year, 2.74%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Europe has been mostly united the past 90 days or so, standing together against the Russian invasion of Ukraine. That, of course, is geopolitically. Economically, it's a whole different story. Specifically, the trade relationship between the European Union and Western Europe's biggest military power, but no longer EU member, the UK. And right about there, I'm going to guess, is where you go, oh, yeah, Brexit. Northern Ireland is the specific issue, this time, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The UK was hoping for frictionless trade with the EU after it left the bloc, but as Archie Norman, boss of British retail giant Marks & Spencer, told the BBC, here's what he faces when sending just one truckload of goods across the Irish Sea to the Republic of Ireland.
Wagons have to carry 700 pages of documentation takes 8 hours to prepare the documentation. Some of the descriptors have to be written in Latin. It has to be in a certain typeface. So it's highly bureaucratic and pretty pointless.
It'll be even more pointless, he said, when the Brexit grace period ends and he faces the same hassle sending goods across the Irish Sea to the northeast corner of the island of Ireland, which is part of the UK.
Quite a lot of products simply wouldn't get to Northern Ireland, and what does go there would be very, very costly.
For most non-food products from the British mainland unloaded here in Northern Ireland, the Brexit grace period is already over. And a lot of goods from Great Britain, or GB as it's called, have been squeezed out of the Northern Ireland market. Robin Mercer runs the Hillmount Garden Centre in Belfast.
We have not brought a plant in from GB this year at all. You know, it's just too much hassle.
Instead, he's had to buy his plants from further afield, from EU countries, where weather and soil conditions are different. He says the British plants are healthier. So you would prefer to be getting them from GB?
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, like we've worked with firms for 20, 30 years from GB, but it's just so much, you know, paperwork, so much hassle.
But all this hassle, says Mattia Di Ubaldo of the UK Trade Policy Observatory, is the inevitable result of Brexit.
The EU has to protect the integrity of the single market. It cannot allow a border where products could leak into the European Union without being subject to the checks.
And he says those checks can't take place between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic.
Avoiding a border in the island of Ireland was necessary to protect the peace process.
Such a border would infuriate those in the British province that want a united Ireland and would undermine the Good Friday Agreement that brought peace there 25 years ago after decades of violent struggle. Trouble is, putting the border between the province and the rest of the UK instead under an arrangement called the Protocol has enraged the pro-British unionists in Northern Ireland.
The Protocol has to go.
Sammy Wilson of the Democratic Unionist Party, which is now refusing to take part in the governance of Northern Ireland.
The protocol is a poison in the system at present. There is no consent for the protocol amongst any of the unionist representatives.
It's the protocol, he says, that is the most serious threat to the Good Friday Agreement. Now the UK government in London has plunged into the fray.
Order!
Order!
In a rowdy parliamentary session, the government said it'll introduce a bill enabling it to suspend parts of the protocol unilaterally if the EU doesn't agree to radical changes. Brexiteer lawmakers like Peter Bone loved the move.
The only way you're going to get the EU to come to the negotiation table and really negotiate with you is if you threaten them with that bill.
But opposition spokesman on foreign affairs Stephen Doughty accused the government of threatening to tear up a treaty that it signed just over 2 years ago.
Britain should be a country that keeps its word. The rest of the world is looking at us and wondering if we're a country that they want to do business with.
In the same vein, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House of Representatives, warned that Congress wouldn't agree a free trade deal with the UK if the Brits ripped up the protocol. The European Commission hinted at a trade war over the issue, and the US State Department deplored this rift between the Allies when they should be united behind Ukraine. The Brexit earthquake rumbles on. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
There's been a whole slew of retailer earnings reports out the past couple of weeks. Macy's, Dollar Tree, Costco, and Walmart as well. Honestly, it's been kind of a mixed bag. Some companies doing well, others not. And therein actually lies some insight. Which retailers tend to flourish, which falter when people's wallets are under stress, and what that says about where consumers are right now. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab takes it from there.
It's a pretty easy trend to wrap your head around. Diana Smith, a retail analyst at Mintel, says when household budgets are under stress,
consumers will pull back on their discretionary spending and only focus their dollars on essential goods.
But earnings from Macy's and Nordstrom tell a different story. Even though prices are rising, people are still saying yes to dresses.
We are absolutely seeing a group of consumers who are just reprioritizing what essential means to them.
It could mean work clothes or wedding attire, because Smith says there's still plenty of pent-up demand from people with some financial wiggle room. These are the same people who can afford to buy in bulk. Costco beat earnings estimates last quarter. It attributes that to keeping gas prices a few cents below average. Dan Blanchard at the Yale Center for Customer Insights says essentially two birds, one stone.
Once they've already made the trip to Costco for gas, they're much more likely to do the rest of their shopping there as well.
Gas could be another reason why dollar stores are getting a boost. Three quarters of Americans live within 5 miles of a Dollar General. They're especially popular in rural areas that don't have big box stores. Plus, Blanchard says there's the obvious draw, the prices.
People have this belief that they're going to be better off retaining their value by shopping there compared to places like grocery stores.
Dollar Tree says groceries made up a bigger part of its sales last quarter. Akshay Rao, a marketing professor at the University of Minnesota, says this is a problem for stores like Walmart and Target, which missed earnings expectations. Because when budgets are strained, shoppers are less loyal to stores and brands.
I can go to the other store and get the same utility.
So what's a slumping retailer to do? Rao says push store brands and sales and hope that this period of inflation doesn't last long enough for consumers to make permanent changes to the way they shop. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which we introduce AAA to the concept of, I don't know, margin of error, negligible difference, take your pick. We have been quoting AAA a lot the past couple of months, of course, as gas prices have gone through the roof. And they are a great resource, to be clear, for which we are grateful. However, comma, the latest AAA national gas average prices today for regular, $4.59 a gallon, which is down from a day earlier when it was $4.60 a gallon. I'm not making that up. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context. The callback to Mitchell's story about consumers keeping on spending in this economy despite, you know, everything. So here is the head scratcher. The University of Michigan came out with its regular report on consumer sentiment today. We are as cranky now, late May of 2022, as we have been in more than a decade. We are cranky about inflation. We are cranky about the short-term economic future. We are cranky about the long-term economic future. But hey, like Mitchell said, we're still spending. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody, all right? And if you've got the day off on Monday, remember why for me, would you? Thanks. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.